Hey. Welcome back. I'm Tarek. I'm an addict.
Hey, Tarek.
I want to go back to page bottom of page 14 and 15. For years, I thought that every time I worked through the steps, the focus was for me to grow spiritually, and that was the intent of working the steps. And about 3 years ago, I was listening to Don Pritz give a workshop, and in his workshop, he said, "God bless alcoholics and big book people because they actually think working the steps is the work." And he said, "It's not the work. The work in Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous is taking others through the work." And he went to this line in the big book, and I finally got it. And it's been there for years, and I just missed it. It says, "If an addict or alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, we will not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead." So the big book promises you trials and low spots, but it also tells you that we grow spiritually through work and self-sacrifice for others. And those of you that are engaged in 12-step work understand when it says work and self-sacrifice. Because there are times where I just don't want to do it, and I do it anyway. So I just wanted to emphasize the discussion that must be had at the bottom of page 14 and 15. Impress upon people you're taking through the steps that the work they're doing going through the steps is just preparation. Prep work for the real work. All right, so now we're going to move on. We're going to move to page 20, bottom of page 20. I won't even talk about the moderate, because if you're at a CA convention, you don't do much moderately. So we're going to talk about the hard addict and the hard drinker. That person may have a habit badly enough to gradually impair them physically and mentally. Who is impaired physically and mentally by their addiction? Okay. It may cause him or her to die a few years before their time, but here's what separates the hard from the real. If a sufficiently strong reason, like ill health, falling in love, change of environment, a warning from a doctor, becomes operative or paramount, this man or woman can stop or moderate, although they may find it difficult and troublesome and may even need medical attention. So this is where I have a conversation with them, and I want to talk about the sufficient reasons that came across your path that probably was probably a good idea for you to stop or to, you know, try to moderate. And for me personally, I'll share my experience around the great career that was destroyed, the trust and the self-respect that was destroyed, the swearing that if I lose my house or the bankruptcy or if I get kicked out of I was in grad school, all these things, if they were to happen, they all happened. Being in grad school was a sufficient reason, did not work. The family was a sufficient reason, did not work. Financial destruction was a good reason, it did not work. I lost everything. These were all sufficient reasons. One of my closest friends dying was not a sufficient reason. And so clearly for me, I had the sufficient reasons and I could not stop or moderate. So I asked, give me some sufficient reasons out of your experience that would have been a good idea for you to stop and moderate. Let's find out. Because they got to see that. They got to see the lack of power, that they do not have the power. We're easing our way into there is no human power. Okay, and so then you talk about the hard, and then you talk about the real, okay, and there the major difference is that at some stage of a real alcoholic or real addict's using and drinking career, they begin to lose all control of their liquor or drug consumptions once they start to drink. Now, for me, I make a distinction when I'm taking someone through the steps regarding an alcoholic addict with power and an alcoholic addict without power. Because there are a lot of people that have the physical component of addiction, which means I don't know what's going to happen once I put it in my body. But they don't struggle from the mental obsession like other people do. So we got to, the next page introduces you to the alcoholic that's lost power and the addict that's lost power. But right now they're talking about the physical component. Physically, do I have it? You belong here. Okay, now we're going to find out at what level you have to do the step work as we get closer to page 24. So, page 24. I'll be honest, this paragraph, when I was brought back here and separated for the last time on the morning of November 5th, 2007, and I was going through the big book with Randy and then with Dante, and this paragraph changed the course of my recovery. Because it said, Tarek, for reasons you don't understand, you have lost the power of choice in drinking. Let me preface this, that they say the fact is for most alcoholics and addicts. They don't say every alcoholic and addict. And that's why I make the distinction with what they're talking about here and what we read on the previous page. For most alcoholics and addicts, like Tarek, you know, I've lost the power of choice in drink and drug. My so-called willpower becomes unavailable to me. I am unable at certain times, and those are the three words that changed my recovery, because I don't know. That means I must do this like I smoke crack, because I don't know what the day looks like when my old master is going to come looking for me. He's already looking for me. You know, but there's gonna, if I get too far away from this, the door opens and he walks right in. Okay, right now he just knocks. I don't answer the door. At certain times I can't bring into this mind, into my consciousness, with sufficient force, the memory of the suffering and humiliation of a week or a month ago, and with crack cocaine, it's a few hours ago. We are without defense against the first hit of crack, the first shot of dope, and the first drink. So this right here is what solidified me in my first step, the first half of the first step. This told me that I have to do this like I smoke crack. And a lot of you in this room know me, and you know that I am very passionate, and some people use the word militant, and some people use the words over the top. And all I can say is, and I don't want you to perceive this the wrong way, but not a day goes by that I don't think about crack cocaine. No obsession. But somehow it just shows up on my radar. And I could only imagine if I drifted away from this work for a week or two. I think my number would get called. And I'm not willing to do that. And what I have found here is far greater than anything I had found in any other area of my life but prior to almost 9 years ago. So this is it. This is when you see this and you've got page 21, you've got page 24, you can declare powerlessness. All right, that is the first half of the first step. And then we have to move over to page 25, paragraph 2. So now when we've declared powerlessness, why is it we need to seek God? We're going to get to that in a few pages, but the great fact is just this and nothing less, that we've had deep and effective spiritual experiences, which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, our fellows, God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. We must have a conversation here about what is the spiritual experience, because a lot of us think it involves the paranormal or the ecstasy or just something that perhaps it won't be for the early person, the newcomer. It's really one word, change, right? The big book in the back says profound alteration in your reaction to life, a vast change of feeling and outlook, and a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from addiction. Those are the descriptions, and this is the conversation I need to have, because people hear spiritual experience, especially for someone who's never been exposed to this process, and there's a label and an image that immediately goes into their mind about what the spiritual experience is. Mm-hmm. And they think it involves seances and rituals and ceremonies, and yes, that can be part of it, but it's not what we're talking about here. Right now we're talking about a change in the way you respond to life. That's the spiritual experience we're looking for. All right, we're going to move on from there. We're going to go to page 30. A little bit more on the first step. Most of us have been unwilling. And another thing, when you take someone through these paragraphs and they're reading, have them put their name in it. Personalize it. So before recovery, Tarek was unwilling to admit he was a real addict or alcoholic. Tarek did not like to think that he was bodily and mentally different from the people in his life. Therefore, it's not surprising that Tarek's career has been characterized by countless vain attempts that he could prove that he could smoke crack on the weekends or drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, Tarek will control and enjoy his using and drinking is his obsession. It's the great obsession of every abnormal drinker or user. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing, and Tarek pursued it into the gates of insanity or death. Tarek has learned that he has to fully concede to his innermost self that he's an addict and or alcoholic. This is Tarek's first step in recovery, not that Tarek admits he's powerless, dash that his life has become unmanageable. That's the short form of the first step. The delusion, Tarek's delusion that he's like other people, like my two buddies I talked about earlier, then or even today, has been smashed for me. I know I'm wired differently because I see how the internal condition manifests in me, and some of it's changed and some of it's evolving. And so here's a very, and this just came to me a couple of years ago. I remember David Marquez did a workshop and he talked about this topic, but I didn't run with it then, but I've run with it a couple of years later. And so you're taking a new person through the steps and you're asking them to concede to their innermost self that they're an addict or alcoholic based on the first half of the first step. And then a few pages later, you're telling them that the great reality, that the solution to their problem is deep down inside of them. And so we're telling the newcomer that your conception of God it lives deep down inside of you. So on some level, are you asking the newcomer to concede to God that you are okay and accept that he made you an addict or alcoholic? I think we lose new people because they walk into the rest of the step work with some anger towards God, with a resentment towards God for making them addict and alcoholic. I don't think we have enough discussion around this idea because, look, the rest of the process is about God. And so if you're walking into a process that demands you continue to rely upon God, every step is about deepening your experience with a God of your understanding. You've got to have this conversation with somebody to see if that anger is there, that resentment is there. And then you're compelled to write about it in the fourth step. You know, I know there's been many inventories where God didn't show up on my inventory. He should have been there. You know, because at the end of the day, all my resentments are either against myself or God. That's what they really are. And so the discussion here must be had about concession to innermost self. Concession, I ask them, do you know what concession means? To concede is to let in begrudgingly, to let something in that you don't want in. And so you have this discussion, and then this is where I talk about denial. The big book does not use the word denial, okay? Al-Anons and Kohanons have denial. They know the elephant's in the room, but they reject the elephant. Alcoholics and addicts suffer from delusion. We suffer from illusion. We suffer from obsessions, and we suffer from the inability to tell the difference between what's true and false. Okay, that's delusion, not knowing the difference. Denial is where the concept of having a choice comes from. It's an intellectual sorting out process. I examine my different options and I reject or accept. Right? With delusion, we don't examine options. We don't see them. The illusion is that we have a choice. When the big book says the problem has been removed and we're placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected, the illusion that I have a choice is what's been removed. Okay, so this is where I have this discussion. And we're going to move on now to page 34. This is going to tell your sponsee at what level they have to do the step work. For those who are unable to drink or use moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. Not one day at a time, for good and all. We're assuming, of course, that the person that you're working with, taking them through the steps, desires to stop. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which they've already lost the power to choose whether they will drink or smoke crack or shoot dope. I think there are a lot of people in the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous that don't have to do this. But you have to find out who you're working with, and you, more importantly, you have to know what you are. You have to know if you fit this, that your experience says you cannot live happy, joyous, and free in this world without a spiritual basis of life. There's another part in the big book that says, you know, dying the alcoholic addict death and living on a spiritual basis are not easy alternatives. We're going to get to that here in a second, but you have to have the discussion here. Do you believe, this is the question, do you believe that you can stop and stay stopped on your own power without living on a spiritual basis? right? You got to have that discussion. It'll tell you how much resistance you're going to have from this person moving forward to this way of life. We're going to move now to page, let's see here, page 37. If I were to ask the people in the room right now, what's your definition of insanity? I guarantee somebody's going to say doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. I have developed a deep loathing for this statement. I think the big book gives the best definition of insanity I've ever heard. And it's after Jim, right? Jim is the car salesman. He works the first three steps, does not work to grow spiritually, and then he drinks the whiskey and the milk, and suddenly the thought out of nowhere that it's a good idea, and that's sudden, but the sanity, the thought of sanity and the consequences is very vague, and so he drinks. And then they say, whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion and the ability to think straight be called anything else? The lack of proportion, physical craving. Inability to think straight, mental obsession. So, just real quick on a current experience with the step work, you know, I'm almost 9 years into this, going back through a piece of work, and the question I had to ask myself before I took the second step was, like, what areas of my life do I lack proportion and an ability to think straight? That's how I went into the second step. And this is what we're up against. This, is, at our core, is the coupling of the major problem. This lack of proportion applies in so many areas of my life. If you took a minute to examine it, it probably applies in your life. And then you have the inability to think straight. If you examine it, it's there. But for the newcomer, you have to show them the physical craving and the mental obsession. And it's going to be rooted in something Scott's going to get into, which we call the spiritual malady. So go with this definition of insanity. Forget you ever heard the other one.
That's right.
And so now we're going to do, and you know, I will summarize the story of the exceptional man, Jim, the jaywalker, and Fred, because they're all very quite different. The exceptional man, a prolonged period of sobriety, told him he could drink like other people. No. Jim actually worked the first three steps and didn't grow spiritually and drank again, but he had a resentment. He was working for a company he used to own. The jaywalker, he's the textbook example of the chronic relapser that just cannot stay sober, cannot work steps, just runs in and out of bars and crack houses, back and forth to the hospital until he ultimately dies. And then you have Fred. Now, Fred's a pimp. There's nothing wrong with Fred, right? Not a cloud on the horizon, the end of a perfect day, and he drinks, right? But he gave them the middle finger when they came to see him in the hospital. He goes, I appreciate what you guys are saying, but what you guys have been through teaches me a lot about myself, and where you guys failed, I will succeed. And that did not happen. And he drank, and that's what we're going to go to right now, page 42. Because in Fred's story is two very important concepts that you have to talk about with a newcomer. And we like to talk about it in our little family. We call it the strange mental blank spot. Can I get a show of all the crackheads in here? Oh, yes, my people. So I will never, I worked for this company, and we would, I'd sit in my office and fight that mental obsession all day. And then it would go away. And I go down about 5 o'clock to get into my car in the parking garage. And as I'm pulling out of the parking garage, I see the interstate. And it's on 75, right at 285. By the time I get to the red light on Cobb Parkway, my car automatically turns towards the interstate. And 20 minutes later, I'm at the corner of North Avenue and Boulevard. Okay, this happened to me on days where I fought the mental obsessions and I lost. This also happened on days where I didn't have a mental obsession and I left work and that happened. So the strange mental blank spot, it's almost like it's autopilot. This is what they're talking. There's no premeditation here. You know, and when this strange mental blank spot hits, it's sudden, like Jim's story, out of nowhere, it comes to me. And it's important that we talk about that because they describe it about Fred. Well, just did that happen and more. For what I had learned of addiction and alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic addict mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge cannot help me in the strange mental blank spot. I've never been able to understand people who said a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I know then it was a crushing blow. So again, this goes back to at certain times. I don't know when the mental blank spot's going to hit, so I have to do this to whatever capacity my Creator gives me on every day. I have to go to the limit. And so the next two paragraphs on page 42, if you ever get a phone call about a 12-step call and you're uncertain on what to do, two things. You call someone to go with you. One person 12 steps and the other person watches what the hell's going on. If it's a hotel room, you check the bathroom. You check the closets. There's no weapons. All that good stuff. If it's take a trash bag, if it's an alcoholic, you're 12-stepping. Maybe a change of clothes. But if you're wondering on how the mechanics of it, these next two paragraphs. They tell you how the two guys came in 12-step Fred. They shared experience. They cited the experiences out of their drinking. And they convinced Fred that they understood what he was going through. Then they presented him with the solution, and then they outlined the program of action. That's the 12-step call. And first and foremost, you may want to ask the person you're 12-stepping, do you think you have a problem with alcohol and drugs? And if they say, no, I don't have a problem, well, there ain't shit you can do at that point. And then they sum up everything on the bottom of 43 in one paragraph. They sum up everything you've done in these 43 pages and the 8 pages in the doctor's opinion. Three important questions. Are you an addict at certain times that has no effective mental defense against the first drink or drug? Ask that question. Have a conversation. Do you believe that, except in a few rare cases, neither you or any other human being can give you such a defense? Then I have the discussion about the home group cannot be your higher power. The home group is made out of humans, and humans will fail. So the home group cannot be your higher power. I don't believe it can. It has to be something that makes that wind blow and the sun shine and those stars come out at night. That's a power out there that does that. Do you believe that's you? No. Well, that's a power greater than yourself. Do you believe your defense must come from a higher power? And then I'll have a conversation of the why. What do you mean and why are two of the best questions to ask people you're taking through the steps. Where'd you get that idea is another one. Where'd you get that belief system? So let's move on now. We're going to be page 44. And again, this is a summary of everything you've done up to this point. So I'm sponsoring Joe. I'm saying, Joe, you've learned something about addiction and alcoholism. Can you tell me what it is? Find out how, I mean, has this guy been paying attention? Has it been grounded into him or gal? We've made a clear distinction between the alcoholic and non-alcoholic and the addict and the non-addict. Joe, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. Is that you? Is that the mental or physical component of what you're suffering from? Have a conversation. Because you've got work to do if he doesn't understand that. You've got to have some more conversation around that part of the step. Or if when using and drinking, Joe, you've got little control over the amount you take. You don't know how many days it's going to last. You really, all bets are off when you put drugs and alcohol in your body. Let's talk about it. Well, here's the news for you, Joe. You're probably alcoholic and addict because you've got both of these going on for you. And you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. And this is the most important question in the paragraph. Do you think it's your only answer? Because then again, once he answers that question, you've got a good idea of what you're working with. And most of the time, if they're going to tell you, if they have convincing testimony to you that they're really not sure this process is going to work, they most likely, not all the time, most likely they're going to disappear at some point. Because it's got to be the only house left right on the block. Is that what they say? So then we move into, well, Joe, we're going to talk about what an atheist is. We're going to talk about what an agnostic is. And if you're one of these, which I've yet to work with an atheist, so I don't have that experience. But to be doomed an addict death that you're living, you're walking through currently, Joe, or an alcoholic death, or to live life on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. But if I had to ask you, Joe, Which path do you want to go down right now? And the only people that question and resist this question are those who do not have a solid first step. That's right. If they don't have a solid first step, their first step's not rooted in hopelessness, it's not rooted in life and death, therefore here they will struggle. They will balk. Important question. The big book's incredible. It just asks the same stuff over and over and over. They're trying to establish that solid ground to move forward. And this is a really good spot. I'm going to turn it over to Scott, and he's going to take us out of this session.
Thank you so much, Terry. I'm Scott. I'm a member of Cocaine Anonymous. I want to back up to bottom real quick. I just want to note one thing. I think it's bottom of 34. Okay, bottom of 34. Something that I have found in the high percentage of people I've worked with over the years, especially people that are newer to this thing, newer to recovery, don't really have a lot of stuff on their canvas, so to speak, when it comes to the 12 steps, which, by the way, these are great people to work with because they don't have a bunch of old ideas about recovery, which is always enjoyable. Here's something that I notice that's a part of the human condition, and that's that I have yet to meet one alcoholic or addict who does not think they could have chosen to do something differently than what they did. Right, so we're riddled with huge, just truckloads of guilt and shame for the things we've done, and that shame is so directly connected to a moral or philosophical system that we have for ourselves, right, and the belief that we could have chosen to do something differently. So, bottom of 34, it says, how then shall we help our readers determine to their own satisfaction whether they are one of us? The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity. You know, there's some people that say, well, just go over to the bar and drink some more and you'll figure it out, right? So I don't do that to people. I definitely don't say go back to the trap and get a slab, right? I'm not going to do that, right? I have a greater duty than that, right? So we shall describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking or using, for obviously this is the crux of the problem, right? The crux of the problem. Our thinking. Back in Dr. Zetinia says we must have a psychic change. We must have a change in the way we think. The most simple and layman way to explain a spiritual awakening in its beginning is the change in the way we think. Right. So what I'll do is I'll sit with a guy and I will ask him questions around this, because he will obviously still have some memories or some ideas or beliefs that maybe he chose to do the things he did. Right. So I will start asking him or her questions and I will literally want them to go into, tell me a time when you woke up and you said you weren't going to do what you did anymore again. Right. You can always find somebody with that one, because you don't have to say that you said you were going to quit forever. Just tell me a time you woke up and you said you're not going to do what you did then again. Everybody will have one if they're one of us, right? Most people have many of them, right? Okay, did you do it again? I've never gotten a no. Always gotten a yes. Why did you do it again? When did you make the conscious choice? And tell me about that exact moment when you made the conscious choice to do it again, having made a decision not to do it ever again. Never has anybody gone, oh yeah, I made the choice and I said, I'm going to go do this even though I did that and burnt the whole shit to the ground. You follow me? Are you guys all with me in what I'm saying right now? That will like bring people home, right? Like that thing right there starts to get people to really understand that strange mental blank spot that Tarek was talking about, or that I just completely forgot that decision and I went right back down the rabbit hole, right back down the rabbit hole. So if you've got a guy that's still there, I mean, and Tarek, I'm so glad he touched it. You know, if we're not really connected to this first step, we're not going to go into what I'm about to talk about in the second step, right? It's just not going to be available to me because I'm really not going to think I need it, right? Nor is a new guy. Okay, here we go. Let's move over to, we're going to move into chapter 4, We Agnostics. All right, page 44. Tarek, you already did paragraphs 1 and 2, right? Mm-hmm. All right, so that's moving out of, we know that the first step, we admitted we were powerless over cocaine, hyphen, and that our lives have become unmanageable, right? So I explained to the new guy, the allergy of the body, the obsession of the mind exists there before the hyphen, right? Now we're going to look at what comes after the hyphen, right? that I've become unmanageable, right? My life is unmanageable, and I need to look at what that looks like. So I'll take them over to page 52. We use three different things here. The book called these the basic bedevilments. We also call them untreated addiction, current agnosticism, spiritual malady, right? All of this, it's all synonymous for us. Because this shows up drunk or sober, but we got a new guy, so we're going to talk to him about it, how it looked in his life, right? And you're going to, I'll go through it and I'll ask the questions, right? I'll say, are you having trouble with personal relationships? You know, the second full paragraph. Could you control your emotional nature? Were you a prey to misery and depression? Could you make a living? Now, if a person has a job, then I'll note that it's not just about the job, right? It's not that you get a paycheck. Are you happy in what you do? Are you of service to your company? Or are you resentful and laying down and saying F you to people behind their backs, right? Like, what's really going on, right? Do you feel happy and usefully whole in your position, right? Do you have a feeling of uselessness in your life? Look in your marriage, in your friendships, in your work. Anywhere else, do you have feelings of uselessness, right? Are you full of fear, right? Are you unhappy? Are you of help to other people? I mean, no new guys have helped anybody, really. Right? I don't know any that are, right? Although there may be some, not in my experience. So anyways, but these are great questions because you get them in touch with what unmanageability looks like. Because often we think unmanageability is because I take drugs, right? My life is unmanageable because I take drugs, right? My life is, our lineage, we consider this a threefold illness, right? We have a mental obsession and a physical allergy, and the underlying driver for all of that manifestation of the allergy and the obsession is the spiritual malady, right? And it's not that there's something wrong with the spirit. And I tell the guy this, there's nothing wrong with your spirit, because that would mean that there's something wrong with the spirit, right? So I'm going to say that there is a conscious separation from you and the spirit, right? Me and the spirit. We do not have a conscious connection to the power that we need to live happy and usefully whole, right? So, and the way it manifests for us is through active addiction. And we burn everything down around us, right? So we talk about this extensively, obviously. So I make the connection that he understands, because we're going to go shortly into a part where the book's going to tell us that once the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically, right? So we need to start prepping him for that, help him to understand how the spiritual malady shows up right out from the outset in our first step. Right? Okay, good, good. So now we're going to back up to page 45. Paragraph 1. And there's a question to him. Lack of power, is it your dilemma, right? Do you have power, choice, and control around cocaine, around heroin, around alcohol, right? Do you have the power to manifest happiness, to manifest joy? Do you have the power to change the things that we just went over on page 52 on your own, right? I mean, of course it's no, 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 right? No. Absolutely not. Would you say that's a dilemma? The guy goes, yeah, that's a dilemma, right? He does. Nobody goes, no, that's totally good. I like it. Right? It's a dilemma. Yeah. Yeah, it's rough, right? It's a rough spot. And we know, as the guy sitting on this side, take him through the book, it's a great spot. Because that's where we want him to be. We want him to be in touch with this low, hopeless spot, because the paradox for us is that hope comes from that spot, right? Power will come from that spot. That's what we need, although he doesn't know it yet. He has to experience it, right? All right. So we tell him, we have to find a power by which we can live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously, but where and how are we to find this power? And then we're going to tell him, look, that's what this book's about, right? I'm not here to sell you any snake oil or anything like that. This is the deal. Listen right here. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. The new guy's problem is he can't quit getting high, right? So that's what I'm going to tell him it's going to solve. Right? That's what this book, you follow directions in this book, it's going to solve your problem. And that's all you got to tell him. We don't got to tell them all of the other stuff's going to happen because that's a lot of stuff, right? We all know that if you've been here for a minute doing this work. But that's good enough because I'll tell you the truth. When I came in here, I just wanted to not smoke any more crack. I didn't want to shoot any more cocaine. I want to stop drinking whiskey. And that's what I wanted, those three things. I didn't want anything else. I didn't want a woman. I didn't want money. All that shit would come soon enough. But and trust me, those things would show up. But in the beginning, I just wanted freedom, man. Right? Yeah. You got something?
There you go.
Okay. All right, so let's move over to page 46. We're going to look at paragraph 2. Oh, yes, 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 okay. So, of course, we got a guy here that's... Everybody comes here with their own conception of God, whatever it may be, right? Their own conception may be there is no God, right? Well, there's no way there's a personal God to me. It doesn't matter. Your conception, come with whatever you want. Bring it to the party, right? I'm good with that. And because I'm not going to tell you what God has to be for you. I'm not going to force it on you in any way. Right? But we've established by now, because we're really connected, that you got a first step. And you have to have some power now. And the main object of this book is for you to find that power so you can get some freedom. Right? So, and much to our relief, I'll tell them, we discover you do not have to consider another's conception of God. Your own conception, and I'll tell this to the new guy, right? However inadequate, is sufficient for you to make the approach and affect a contact with him, right? Give him some visual anchors. Right? You're going to affect a contact by making an approach, no matter what your conception is. Don't let it be the doorknob or the tree. It's got to be something more than that, right? I can't be able to smash your conception. It's got to be a little bigger than that. I heard a guy say one time, it's just got to be all loving, all powerful, and everywhere. I've always loved that. So simple, right? But it doesn't even have to be that for you. But that's a great place to start, right? Many people, of course, will come with their own ideas about what this conception is, and that's fine too. It's a place to start. It's got to affect it affects an approach, affects a contact with them, right? Okay. So moving over to page 47, paragraph 2. And I'll look at him straight. And I've already talked to him a little bit by this point, right? And I've got a feel for where this guy's located on how he feels about the Spirit. Right? And I'll say, and this is to a new guy, I keep it real simple around this, right? Do you now believe, or are you willing to believe, that there is a power greater than you? Right? Either you'll get a yes or a no. If it's a no, then we're going to have to ask some more questions, right? Why do you believe it's a no, right? Do you believe that you're truly hopeless and that you cannot not drink or do dope again, right? If they say yes, then what is it going to take for you to be free? I don't know. Well, the book says it's only power greater than you, and this book will show you how to find it, okay? But I still don't believe this one. Are you willing to believe that you could possibly find one by doing this work? That's a great question. Open questions like that are very powerful because they don't ignite resistance in a person, right? They'll allow a person to contemplate the question, give you an answer that flows out. If I'm gentle with somebody like that, I used to have only one tool in the toolbox. It was a big-ass hammer. Now I've got a bunch of tools, right? And I will... Glenn, you remember the big hammer?
Yes.
Okay, so I used to... Right. So I let them find their own deal around this, right? Are you willing to believe, even if they're no, I still can't. Well, are you willing to believe that it's true for me? It can be that simple. Yeah, I believe you believe it's true for you. Okay, well, let's go from there, right? All right. We just need to get this guy some power, right? Okay, good. We good here?
Mm-hmm.
So let's move over to page 50, paragraph 4. All right, and we talk about, and we're going to note this here, about the original 100, right? The original people who worked the steps, the men and the women of this thing that started out. Because we want to, at this point, we've probably let them know, and if we haven't, it's good to say, this is the combined and condensed experience of the first 100 who got sober and stayed sober and remained free back in the 30s, right? Between 34 and 39. Right? So, and here's where they're going, Bill goes to say. It says, here there are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude toward that power and to do certain simple things. Okay, this is powerful, right? Come to believe in a power, believe the possibility that there is a power, take a certain attitude in that power. That means that a willingness to look for and seek this power to help me with this hopelessness that I found in step one, right? And to do certain simple things. Now these are the, then I'm going to go, remember the things we talked about back in Bill's story where I said all these things are the things you're going to have to be do to find the power? This is the certain simple things, right? Do what's in the steps, and steps from here forward will be steps 3 all the way through the 12th step, right? Or what the certain simple things are. And here's the promise. If you do the certain simple things, that you will have a revolutionary change in your way of living and thinking. So we're back to thinking again, psychic change. The way we think will be changed, and the way you live will be changed. This is true for me. Do you believe it can be true for you? In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of total failure of their human resources, that's a great question. Have you lived, or are you in the face of collapse and despair? Right? Are you in total failure of your human resources? Okay. They found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. That's where we say there's. I have a talk with them about half measures, right? Wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements, right? Like, you're not going to get to come in this with just your big toe. You're going to have to get all the way in the deep end, right? Which is doing the certain simple requirements, which are the steps as they're laid out in front of you, right? It's good. Somewhere in here, too, I always note for people, Dr. Bob's nightmare. Right? I just mention it to him because Dr. Bob, that story, the first story, Dr. Bob gives a promise. He says that if you will go after sobriety with one half the zeal that you went after chasing dope, your Heavenly Father will never fail you. Right? I love that promise because I found it to be 100% true. Right? Have you?
Oh, yeah.
It's a good one to point out to people. It's very simple. Right? Just go at it half throttle. You went at dope, full throttle. Go at this half throttle, man, and you'll be good. Okay. Page 53, paragraph 2. All right. Now, this is what we call the second step proposition. And I'll ask them, have you become crushed by a self-imposed crisis you cannot postpone or evade? And they may not even be connected to the calamity, right? You may have to point it out to them. Say, okay, so the fact that you can't quit smoking crack, is that a crisis? The fact that you cannot stop drinking, the fact that you're whatever, because you know enough details about them, right? They're estranged from the family or whatever may be going on. And you have to use these things to start inputting into their life that you've learned about them right now, so that they can understand that, hey, this is a crisis in my life, right? And I did cause the crisis, right? Because of the way I drink and use dope. Okay? Self-imposed crisis, right? Are you crushed by self-imposed crisis? Right? All right, so if you are, you have to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else God is nothing, right? Either God is or God is not. What is your choice to be? I spent a lot of time talking right here about this proposition, because it's very important, because we're getting to the infinite nature of the spirit in this conversation, right? And many will think that God had nothing to do with their alcoholism or their addiction or any of that, that it was God was always outside of them, right? So as I bring them to this place, I need you to get clear on whether God is everything for you in every bit of your life, right? it's not a complete surrender to the will, right? It's just opening them up to the consideration, to the conception that God's there in all of it. The God of their understanding's there in all the suffering, the loneliness, the despair, and all of the joy, the potential, and the hope that stands in front of them, right? Because they're really standing at the doorstep of a new life. And I need to promise them and pull them with that picture of sanity, of depth and weight, right? And I need them to know that God was never without, right? So I want them to get present to that. And I straight up, either your choice is or it's not. What's your choice to be? I had a guy one time years ago, many of you know him. I asked him the question. He said, well, shit, I'm going to say yes because I'm afraid you won't sponsor me anymore if I say no. And it's got to be better than anything I've known, right? So I'll go with yes, he's everything. That guy's still sober 10 years and working the steps all the time, right? So it can be very simple, right? The second step proposition becomes a contemplative question for consideration and step work throughout our whole sobriety. It's a phenomenal place to go, I promise you. And in the beginning, it's still simple, right? Get straight to the point. Either God's got to be everything or he's nothing. Because if he's somewhere in between, that means God is finite, right? And God cannot be finite. Because you're going to find a place that God doesn't work for you if he's finite. So either he's everything or he's nothing. Okay. Page 55. Go to paragraph 2. So this is kind of the where, the when, the how, and the attitude. Now, people show up in all kinds of belief systems around the spirit, right? Lack thereof, maybe what they've been programmed with, all that's fine. Especially in the beginning, it's fine. It's when we really get a couple years sober, doing some more step work, we get to really do some expansive work around this stuff in the second step, right? So, but we want to talk about the nature of the spirit and how that relates to us, and that's what this conversation's about. So, actually, we're fooling ourselves. Now, of course, this is I, along with many people I've met, think this is one of the most phenomenal chapters in this book. It is a phenomenal chapter. There's, I think, an infinite well of learning and growth in this chapter, for sure. You know, and we've all been worshipers of all these things, worshipers of money, material, relationships, affection, all of these things. Although we may not believe in God, we've had these characteristics of faith and worship a part of our lives for a long time, right? So when I get to this place with him, actually we're fooling ourselves because maybe we're saying we don't really believe or, you know, God's not reasonable or God's not really been there for me or whatever, or I don't really have faith or I don't believe I can have faith or God won't be there for me, whatever story may show up for a new guy, right? We're going to tell him, well, you're kind of fooling yourself, right? For deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. So fundamental, so it's in. It's a foundational thing, right? It's there. It's there even if you don't think it's there. It may be obscured by calamity. This is kind of chaos and fear, right? Created out of my life, the way I live. By pomp, it's arrogance. By worship of other things. That's all the things I just said. You can increase the list infinity, right? Like just worship, look at anything. You ever want to do a fun exercise? Look at all the stuff you worship, right? Let's make a list. What do I worship? But in some form or other, it is there, right? See, all these things may be, but in some form or other, the fundamental idea of God is there. For faith and a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that faith and of that in power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend, right? The feelings we have for people we care about are not always reasonable, right? We can't logic those out, but they're a part of who we are. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly. Now, this is important. Maybe you don't experience it right now. Maybe it's not palpable to you, but you know what? You're going to have to search fearlessly, and I'm going to show you how to search fearlessly, but you're going to have to you're going to have to chop the wood and carry the water on this search, right? But when you search fearlessly, he will be there, right? He is there. Because God is everything, so he must be there. I love it if they made the decision he's everything, because then I'll bring them back to it and keep baiting them with it, right? He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. Now we're told where the power is, deep down within me. This goes back to the conscious separation. The reason I've been unaware of is because the conscious separation I mentioned in the spiritual malady, right? I'm blocked. But the power is deep down within me, the great reality, capitalized, deep down within me. And here's what's crucial, because this will take away any argument. It's in the last analysis that is only there that he may be found. It was so with us, right? So the old ideas may be in the way. Well, I'll say, well, then you haven't done the last analysis. Right? We haven't dug enough. We haven't gone deep enough, right? There's still pomp or arrogance or worship or resentment or whatever's in the way, right? But it's there. This is good stuff. Right? Then he goes on to say, well, you know, we can only clear the ground a bit. If our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly. And I ask him, are you willing to think honestly? Are you willing to search diligently within yourself? Then, if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway, right? This is the realm of the spirit. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. And I'll point out, this is a promise. Consciousness. This means an expanded consciousness, an expanded spirit consciousness, right? So you may have a belief, but it's going to become conscious. It's going to become out of the world of intellect and into the world of consciousness, meaning it's an awakened experience. And it is promised to come to you. Powerful stuff. Okay. We're going to, let me just move over just a minute, catch a couple more things. Page 58, paragraph 2. And I'll ask a guy straight, have you decided you want what I have? If he's got another guy, a couple of my guys in my lineage or people around me, do you want what Tarek has? Do you want what Carl has? Right? They'll always go, yeah. You know this, right? They go, yeah. Your life's so jacked up, man. I mean, think about it. When you came in and got sober, you just wanted what anybody. Somebody smiled, you go, yeah, I want some of that, right? Like, I did. Right? Are you willing to go to any length to get it? Then you are ready to take certain steps, right? Okay. And of course, we've already touched base with it, but real quick, I'll recap what the links are going to look like. We'll talk about the steps real quick, and then that'll be a recap of that. Then we're going to pause now for a break, and then Tarek's going to pick back up in 10 minutes, so we'll come back at 12 minutes after 3 o'clock. Thank you, guys.